You're listening to Trek FM.
Hi, my name is Vaughn Armstrong. I've played more characters in the Star Trek universe than anybody, and I was Admiral Forrest. You are listening to Trek FM.
Maybe it's not the destination that matters. Maybe it's the journey.
Hello, everybody at home, and welcome. This is To The Journey.
To the journey!
I'm your co-host, Tristan Riddell, and with me, as always, is...
Charlene Schmidt.
I am super excited because we have not done this for a while.
Dude, it feels like it's been forever. I feel a little rusty. Got to get those podcast legs going one more time. But we are back, and it's 2016. It is a new year. Now, do you have any New Year's resolutions that do you do that whole thing?
I guess you could say, like, I want to lose a few pounds. Everybody says I don't need to, but I'd like to. And it's not a New Year's resolution because, oh, it's a new year, I need a new me. It's just because Thanksgiving and Christmas happen so close together. Like, I eat like crazy on Thanksgiving. I eat like crazy on Christmas. I eat like crazy on New Year's Eve. And I have multiple families within driving distance. And so I have like three Christmases and three Thanksgivings every single year.
Oh, yeah. So you got all those get-togethers and all that
Yeah,
food.
I have all those. All those get-togethers, all that food, and so I'm slim and trim in September, and then boom, by January, I look like Jabba the Hutt. So I need to trim
no,
down
no,
a little
no,
bit.
No, I'm looking at you right now. You don't look any different to me than you did back in December, but I'll believe you. Yeah, you're charming as ever, Tristan Riddell. So
I'm blushing. I'm getting the vapors.
I'm still feeling the holiday love.
So how about you? Like any New Year's resolutions, any changes you're going to take on or anything like that?
Yeah, I actually do have a little bit of, I have a couple of goals for the new year, and I'm not a big resolutioner. I don't usually kind of buy into that whole thing where, oh, all of a sudden the calendar changes to a new year and we're going to do things differently, right? Well, you know what? 2015 being the year of ups and downs that it was, I do need to make some changes. And so one thing that I am going to do is probably spend a little less time on the internet. And, you know, this is going to be difficult because we are now in the year of the 50th anniversary of Star Trek, and a lot is going to be happening. But the way things have unfolded on the internet in 2015 has kind of helped lead me to this decision. And I'm talking things like the Star Trek Beyond trailer and the announcement of the new series and the Axanar lawsuit, where the news comes out, right? We hear about it and we're like, oh, I'm coming out! Ah! And based on very little information, it seems like everybody has to say their piece and become de facto analysts about what they think is going to happen about these things from that point forward. Now, we all do this a little bit in our heads, right? But because we are in this real-time social culture on the internet, everybody has a voice, everybody can share their thoughts. And you know what? I got really tired this year of, I don't know, I guess hearing all of it. It just, there's so much of it that it becomes tiresome, and it feels, forgive me for the reference, but it feels sort of like a Borg collective where it's just a bunch of noisy voices. And I thought, you know what? Instead of reading all of this stuff that may or may not be true, may or may not happen, we have no idea, why don't I just disconnect, stop staring at the screen, and make something, create something rather than talk about something that somebody else is doing? And so that is actually a big goal that I have, based on how things have unfolded so far, because we have so much left to go, even. We're going to learn so much more. And our, like, the way we feel about all of this is going to change drastically based on the information that we're going to get. And so let's just take a deep breath, take a step back, look at the big picture, and let things unfold, because they will. And I'm going to declutter the noise.
There are times, and especially this past year, where I've been on Twitter for 5 years and 4 months, according to some website that I just went to. And the reason why I went on Twitter, and all of you who are longtime listeners know this, is that I went on for the Star Trek community specifically. Mm-hmm. And because I never grew, like, I had one other Star Trek friend growing up, and then he moved away. And so pretty much the only Star Trek community I had were my parents. And so I desperately wanted other people in my life to talk about Star Trek with. And I was like, okay, I'll try Twitter. And I just fell in love with it. And I fell in love with the people listening to this, to the sound of my voice. And I fell in love with the people on this network. And it was such a great time. And lately, it kind of hasn't been a great time. And it's kind of turned me off. Like, I see myself walking away, like, figuratively and literally sometimes, walking away from Twitter because of the Star Trek community. And I'm not trying to hurt anybody's feelings. I'm not trying to shake my finger at anyone listening to this podcast. And I hate coming off as negative on my podcast. It's just, I feel like everyone is just so negative all the time that I don't want to be negative, and I hate being negative about it. I hate being negative about people's negativity.
I'm glad you made that point. Actually, a couple of really good points. Yeah, I'm right with you. I'm not trying to come down on Star Trek fans and say, oh, you guys don't matter. What you say doesn't matter. I'm sick of hearing you guys. That's not it at all. It really isn't. I'm not calling anybody out in particular. I'm actually speaking just really in general of the internet, because Star Trek is by far not the only fandom that does this. And really, I think it's just a big societal thing now. Something happens in the news, oh, blah, 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 blah. We all do this. And, you know, the more I just think about it, the less good I think it does. But then, yeah, it always seems to devolve into a bunch of negativity, which gets exhausting after a while. It just does. Don't we have enough negativity in the world already? Let's talk about positive things and do positive things.
Here's the thing, Char. I feel like, and I don't want to spend too much time on this because, guys, we do have a topic, but
we really do. We do.
We really do. We promise.
And it's positive.
And it's positive. But here's the thing. I think it comes down to a sense of entitlement and ownership, where people feel like they own things because they like them. If I like this book, and you want to write a sequel to this book, you have to get my permission because I read that when I was a kid, and it's my comfort blanket. It's my security blanket. And so you need my permission as a fan to make a sequel, and it better be a sequel that I want.
Right, which, and that's so incredibly far from the truth. And I think, again, that comes from, I think, being able to share socially with the creators directly. Because a lot of the people that we watched on Trek, a lot of the actors, the producers, they are all available on social media and you have a direct line their way. That's the first time that's really ever happened. I mean, I remember in the 90s, if you wanted any Star Trek news unfolding, you were going to get Star Trek Communicator and you were going to like it. That was it. That's what you got.
Right.
Now it's very different. And I think that sense of entitlement comes to, well, I can complain directly to J.J. Abrams that I think his movie sucks. People do feel a sense of ownership, and it's there, but it's not. One more thing about celebrities on Twitter, Robert Duncan McNeil, bringing this back to Voyager, he said at the start of the year that he's going to spend less time in the virtual world and more time in the real world. So if his account goes dark, that's probably why. And I read that and I thought, you know, good for him.
Yeah. Yeah.
I kind of agree. I'm tired of all the noise and I kind of want to follow suit. And I too want to create rather than react. And so I'm going to join forces with him a little bit. I'm not going to be absent. I'm still going to hang out on Twitter, but I think, yeah, I don't want to get involved with a lot of the chatter. That said, if you still tag me, I'll probably reply or favorite or something. It's just, I don't know, maybe this is going to be a slight gradual change over time on how I use the internet and social media. Okay, I think that's enough. We really need to gear into our topic of the week because I am desperate for some positivity on this podcast. And I have titled this All the Small Things. What that essentially boils down to are the little things about Voyager that we find endearing, that we appreciate, that made the show a happy experience for us. So I've been thinking about this all day. I've got a few in my bag or a few in my brain, maybe. You know me, my memory's awful. We'll see if they kind of float back up as we get going. But I'm dying to know what some of your most endearing little things about Voyager are. Do you have something that we can kick us off?
Well, I mean, here, the thing about this is, like, you know, when we talked about doing this topic, I wasn't quite sure how we would structure this. I wasn't quite sure how would we go about it, and like, would I list something and then we'd talk about it for a little while, or would we just riff and have a conversation about the things that we like about Voyager? I mean, like, the first thing off of my head, the nacelles move. You know,
yes!
Like, I...
Yes! Isn't that so cool?
I love that because there's always something unique about, you know, every ship that we've had. Like, I remember when we first saw the Enterprise D separate in the first episode, I was like, that's freaking sweet.
And it was.
With Deep Space Nine and the station, that it was countless, you know, how many things could, like, come off and move and alter and change and shift. And with Star Trek Voyager, right off the bat, we see the opening credits, and the opening credits are beyond beautiful, the most beautiful out of all of Star Trek. And then we end the opening credits with the nacelles moving upward, and then they zap to warp. And just the first time you see that, you're just like, oh, holy crap, that's different. That looks cool. I have no idea what it does, but it looks cool.
The explanation that I've heard in the past is that the reason why the nacelles go up is due to that whole warp 5 speed limit thing they sort of did at the end of Next Generation. Like, they selectively remembered it when they wanted to for a plot device. And I'm not sure how true that is or not. And I honestly do not care, because I love the fact that the nacelles go up. That's just a cool little feature of Voyager that none of the other, show-based ships have. And so it makes it uniquely Voyager. That's such a great thing to kick us off. And yeah, with this topic, I don't feel like we need to be doing a list per se. It might come off as a list, but no, I just wanted to riff today. Let's riff. Yeah.
I think that's the thing that I love about Star Trek overall, not just specifically Voyager, is just things like that. Is that there's no explanation as to why I think the cells moving up are cool. The sound that it makes, the movement, the introduction, how they use it. It just, there's no explanation for it. It's just, I think it's cool. I like it. It's something really small. It has no effect on the show whatsoever. And it's just something that when I see it, I'm like, okay, it's go time. You know, like when they're struggling, when they get hit by a torpedo, and, you know, and Janeway's like, Paris, get us out of here. And then the camera's outside of the ship, the nacelles move and boom, they're gone. You're like, okay, they're okay. They're okay.
That's a great one to kick us off. I think I've got one that's just as good. And you're going to love this, being a fellow relationshiper just like me. And that is the absolute lack of personal space that Janeway and Chakotay have pretty much, all the time.
Yeah.
Pretty much from season two forward. I mean, especially, I think as the seasons go along, the more apparent it is. Like when they're walking down the corridors. The corridor, okay, granted, it's not that big, but it definitely has more than enough room for two people to walk side by side, but not have to be like shoulder to shoulder. But what do they choose to do? They're shoulder to shoulder. And I just absolutely love that. And I love the fact that people on Tumblr have gravitated toward this. You know, there's whole gift sets of the lack of inherent personal space between Janeway and Chakotay, with all the incidents in just several different animations, side by side, row by row, tons of them all going at once. And I mean, the proof is right there. And it's so funny when you see all those examples lined up. There's absolutely no doubt.
Yeah, this is actually really interesting from a filmmaker's perspective, because everything about Star Trek up until Enterprise was shot in 4:3. Which is a standard aspect ratio for television up until, you know, the 2000s. Then we kind of moved on to 16:9. If Voyager was shot in 16:9, we might not have seen such close proximity between the two characters, because I think they would have done it regardless.
Yeah, I think they would have.
Yeah, I don't think they would have made it as blaringly obvious, because the thing is when you need to get two characters face to face in a 4:3, which is basically a square. It's not quite, but basically a square. And you want a close-up on them, and you want them to face each other. If you want both heads in the frame, you have to have them stand unnaturally close. Watch some TV shows from the 90s, and whenever you have two people talking and they're supposed to stand kind of close together, like they're having a conversation, you would never stand that close to someone in real life. And it's all because of the framing. So once media switched over to 16:9, they had much more freedom to get close on the face, but yet have some natural distance in between. And so it kind of makes me wonder, how would we perceive the JC relationship if it was captured in 16:9?
Man, that's such a great thing to bring up. I hadn't even thought about that. But yeah, I remember even the TNG actors saying, hey, when you're shooting TV, you have to be really close. And that bridge set doesn't look nearly as big as it does on the screen because of the aspect ratio. But I want to believe. You know, I want to believe.
You're like, I choose to believe.
I still think for the sake of leading us on more than anything, because I think Mulgrew and Beltran love toying with us at the possibility of what may or may not have happened with their relationship, their character's relationship. They probably still would have walked unnaturally close to one another as a form of characterization rather than as a necessity for the camera. Because I'm sure that had something to do with it, but the fact that they are so unnaturally close all the time and checking each other out quite often says a lot. And I find it endearing. I look for it in practically every scene now just because I can and want to.
And Janeway's always looking for an excuse to touch Chakotay.
Oh, pretty much. Pretty much.
Yeah, whether it's on the shoulder or a light tap on the chest. It's like, right. That would never happen on a military ship, you know? Like,
no, not even Picard and Riker were doing that. I mean, they were close, but they weren't that close.
Like, yeah, like if you want maybe like a better analogy, you know, like Benjamin and Kira, they would never touch like that.
No, that just would be really unnatural and weird for them. But for Janeway and Chakotay, it's very natural.
It's very comfortable. It's like slipping into a warm bath and hopefully Q's not in it.
Only he is, and so you have to stick your toes out at him.
Speaking of Q, I think one of the small things I really like is just the sheer fact that they brought Q back on. And if that's a small thing, I don't know. Like, I guess in the grand scheme, like out of 7 years worth of episodes, we only got 3 Q episodes. Is that right?
Yes.
And, you know, like in the grand scheme of 7 years worth of episodes, 3 episodes isn't that big of a deal. No. But with John DeLancey, he makes it a big deal. He makes every single episode an event. And just the fact that they tried him on Deep Space Nine, didn't work. They tried him on Voyager, it totally worked. They brought him back and they brought him back once more. I just love the chemistry between Janeway and Q and how Q fits into the Voyager lore. And like, you know, like when he goes, you, bar rodent, you know, just
another one of these fruity concoctions.
You know, it just goes to show how well he fits in. So I guess that's another one of my small things. It's just how well Q fits in to the Voyager show.
Yes, especially since it didn't really work out on DS9. They could have just closed the book on Q right there and said, OK, we've had enough. It's been a great run, Mr. DeLancey, and off you go. But no. I think Mulgrew fought to have DeLancey on the show just because he was a Star Trek character. They were good friends in real life. And look at the chemistry those two have. I mean, they do totally ham it up. And yeah, I love what you said about how 3 episodes in the grand scheme of 100 and what is it, 60 something. It's ridiculous. That's not that many. That's a very small fraction. However, when it is Q, it is an event, and it is a big deal, and that's why those episodes are often singled out and celebrated the way that they are. And especially Death Wish being as good of an episode as it was, I think that just got fans excited to do more and more and more, and so, yes, they did bring it back, and he really did work on Voyager. It was great.
Yeah. Yeah, it absolutely was, and it's great. So what do you have next? Like, what's on your list?
Well, you know, one thing that always hits my brain that I do find endearing, and poor Kate Mulgrew, bless her for having to deal with it, though, is the hair. Think about how much the hair has to do with where the show is at. And you can tell a lot by the hair. You can tell what season it is. Mm-hmm. You can tell if Janeway's wearing the Bun of Steel, how things are going in the course of an episode. Say you tune in on TV because you're not watching Netflix for some reason. This is back in the 20th century, let's say. You turn on the TV and Voyager's on and you're about 15 minutes in the episode. And if you see Janeway's Bun of Steel less than in perfect shape, if there's any hair astray, you know what's hitting the fan. It's not going well. And the more disheveled her hair is, the worse it is. And I'm sure you've seen that meme that's been going around a lot lately with the Darmok. It's got the screen cap of Darmok and like her hair bun unfurled. And then there's a photo of Janeway with her hair all messed up. And so, you know, you've got that going. And I find that very endearing just because of how big of a deal it really was behind the scenes. It also sort of became a deal on the show itself just because it changed so much. I mean, if you see the shoulder bob, you know that that's later seasons, things like that. And B'Elanna gets in the game too, right? I mean, she does the curly, wavy hair for a little while. She tries the braid for a couple of episodes. Mm-hmm. You know, I wish everybody would have gotten into the game a little bit more. Unfortunately, Chakotay dyed his hair and got rid of the peppered EXO look, which we both love. We've said that countless times.
Yeah, I think that's a solid small thing point, is just how well the characters change. And we're not talking about their arc, but...
Right. These are small things.
Yeah. Like with Picardo, you know, his hair is much longer in the first couple of seasons and then he trims it down later on. And, you know, Janeway's bun speaks for itself sometimes, almost literally. And
for real.
And we also, you know, like with even with Paris, you know, his hair is longer at the beginning and then he trims it down.
And it recedes a little bit. Hate to say.
Just a smidgen.
It happens. And, yeah.
And, you know, even Harry's, you know, like his hair gets shorter because he has that nice boyish tussled look at the beginning. And everybody ages. It's 7 years. And I love how everybody ages, because everybody ages so well and looks fantastic. And it's just these little things that you can, like, we can look at an episode. Like, even though, you know, we have every single episode memorized, even by the shot selection, we can tell you what episode it is. But even if we didn't have it memorized, we could tell you, you know, what season it was because of how these characters look, even though they're all uniformed and wear the same thing every single day.
Absolutely. Oh, yeah. And hair has just about everything to do with that.
I remember when season 3 or 4 of Enterprise came out on Blu-ray and they used a season 1 image of Archer.
Oh, I remember this, and everybody freaked out.
Yeah, everybody freaked out because they're like, that's not what he looked like in season 4, even though he's wearing the same exact uniform.
Right. The giveaway? The hair.
That's not his hair. And so you cannot mess with Star Trek fans when it comes to hairstyles in Star Trek.
Yeah. See what the Paramount execs did to us? They were so particular about the hair that we became particular about the hair.
Exactly.
Another thing, that something about the uniforms reminded me something that I absolutely love about Voyager, because I don't think any of the other Trek series did this quite in the same way, but I love it when the crew members, and it's usually Janeway who does this only, but a couple others got in the game. You strip down just to the turtleneck. You take the jacket off.
Yeah, I love finding out if it's, okay, like what version they're wearing. Are they wearing the long sleeve one? Are they wearing the short sleeve one? Are they wearing the tank top underneath? Like, you know, like it's, there's so many different variations to it.
It's true. Yeah, I mean, I would think that wearing all those different layers would get really hot, especially on a climate controlled starship. Like, why would you actually need the tank top underneath the turtleneck, underneath the jacket of the uniform? But what do I know?
My in-universe explanation that they keep it cold so that people can layer.
But why?
You have so many different species hanging around, and you know you can't have individual temperature zones, and so you gotta make it some sort of standard. And so I'm sure like some engineer and some human resource person got together and said, okay, let's take a cross-section of the Federation and the people who join Starfleet, and we're like, okay, this person really likes it cold, this person really likes it hot, humans are somewhere in the middle, so let's do it around humans, you know, like maybe a little bit above humans. Or a little bit below, since it's cold. And then that way the humans can just bundle up and these other guys will just, you know, tough luck. that is what I think happened. A human resource person and an engineer got together, did the math, and they're like, okay, we should keep it cold.
And I honestly think that one of those human resources people was probably an Andorian.
Probably. I'm looking at a guide to Captain Catherine Janeway's multiple hairstyles right now. It's something that was found on Pinterest, and it has about 8 cells, and on the top are all buns of steel.
Yes.
And there's 4 variations of buns of steel. There's a French twist, there's the short hair, there's the basics ponytail, and then there's the initial caretaker style. Now, you know more about this than I do. Why on earth would you spend the money to refilm all of your main protagonist scenes because you didn't quite like her hair?
The only logical reason is consistency. They decided they didn't like the way that her shoulder-length hair looked. It wasn't authoritative enough, if I'm recalling correctly. And I think that's absolute BS. But they wanted something more, so they came up with a school marm bun of steel hairdo and decided that was more authoritative for whatever reason. But as a result of that, they had to reshoot all those scenes to make it all look the same. And you would think, being such bean counters that the execs tends to be, that they would be more concerned about the money and just let, like, the pilot, you know, go through with shoulder length hair, and then in the next episode she changes her hair, because we got that too. We got the French twist for a couple of episodes, then she went back to the bun of steel, and then it was short for the spaghetti fight episode.
Parturition.
I always forget the name of that episode, darn it. And then it goes back to the bun of steel, and then what?
Yeah,
makes absolute no sense, and there is no good explanation. No.
Someone pretty high up had to have made that decision where they go, you know what? I don't like her hair. Here's the money for reshoots. And Berman and Pillars is like, okay, all right, okay.
Yeah. And as I recall, I heard an interview with Rinrik Kolbe, who directed Caretaker, and the whole process was incredibly frustrating just because of the extra time, had to speed up the shooting schedule, put the whole rest of the season off kilter. They were running late anyway because of Genevieve Bujold bowing out. I mean, what a hot mess. What a horrible thing, in a way, to do to the production, especially when so much was hinging on the fact that they're launching a new network on it.
Can you imagine being Kate Mulgrew going, wait, we have to do what? Because of why?
I'm pretty sure that's how that went down. And I do not blame her for one second for being frustrated about the whole hair thing, because they weren't really nervous about her. They were nervous about a woman. And that's ridiculous. Even back then.
All boils down to. That is what it all boils down to. Because if this was a male captain, you would like, if Archer had his part on the right side instead of the left, you would never ever see a studio exec saying, you know what, we should probably reshoot that because I think his bangs just go down a little bit too far. No one would ever say that.
No, I mean, I think even the closest thing that we had for a male comparison was Patrick Stewart wearing the toupee for the audition and taking it off and convincing Gene Roddenberry that was the right thing to do.
Yeah.
And that was it.
That was it. I think out of all that we said, I think the French twist is my favorite.
Really? You like the French twist?
I do. I always thought it was the kind
of interesting.
Okay,
why do you like that one?
Yeah, I don't know what it is. I can't tell you specifically why I like it. Actually, no, I ended with it. I think it's feminine, but I think it's stylish, but at the same time, it's authoritative.
All right, I want to completely switch gears on you because I just thought of another thing. And it was sort of a laughing stock of Voyager by a lot of people, but I thought it was kind of a neat touch to try out bioneural gel packs.
Yeah.
I think it was a failed experiment overall, but it was interesting to try it, especially on a science vessel. I mean, why wouldn't you try something new like that, merging the mechanical with the biomechanical, if you will? And of course, we did get an infection from cheese as a result of it, but this is what happens when you science.
Yeah, I thought it was cool because, you know, we mentioned it in the first episode. They got bioneural gel packs. It's fun and cool because they move just a little bit faster than isolinear chips. It's a natural progression, maybe not a natural progression, but it's a progression because we've seen chips for so long in Deep Space Nine and Enterprise and kind of in the original series all the way back then.
Yeah.
So to have something new, I appreciated it. Did it feel kind of weird that they would get sick and go wrong and they said that they couldn't replace them, but yet they did, you know, like, and, you know, it's...
It might have not been the most thought out thing, no. At least that's the impression I got, where they came up with this whole thing and, hey, guess what? It's a lot faster, better response time. Let's do it. Let's implement it on a scientific vessel and see what happens. And that just happened to be Voyager. It may be the Intrepid class vessels. I bet there are more than one. But I think it's definitely, you said a natural progression. Well, I think it kind of is, because even to date in our world, the fastest transmitters that we know about are the neurons in our body. And to do that, you got to have things of a more biological nature. That's not to say that circuitry won't surpass us in the future, but it makes sense to me that that logic is there, why they would try it.
Yeah, I think so too. I think it really does make sense. And I think it was something to experiment with and something to change, because Star Trek, we should always be moving forward with Star Trek, whether even if it's not, you know, like in a timeline sense, if it's in a story sense or a technological sense, even moving forward in the sense of even when we were moving back with Enterprise and with J.J. Abrams, we see something different. We see something unique. Paramount and CBS needs to give the audience something new. What's really, really funny, right. And I know we've talked about hairstyles a lot.
So?
I Googled French twist Janeway.
Yeah.
And the first thing that came up was an article written by you called Captain Janeway and the Ever-Morphing Hairdo.
Fantastic. That was one of my very first articles on Trek FM, written in, I think the very end of 2010.
Yeah, 2011 is what it says.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Very early 2011.
Right around in there.
Then.
And it's just so funny because it has hairdo number 3, French twist. And it's... It's from episodes Heroes and Demons and Cathexis. She returned to the Bun of Steel, yes, in the following episode.
And I didn't even get into the secondary stuff, like things that she did for her holodeck programs and the like. That was just round one. I was going to eventually do a round two, but then I eventually took on more of an editor role and stopped writing. So that didn't happen. But I know other people out there on the internet have gone into extensive detail on all of Janeway's hairstyles, because I very recently saw a compilation on Tumblr even. So it's out there if you want to look for it.
Yeah, it made me laugh really, really hard. That you were the first thing that came up on the interwebs.
Well, me and your co-host on the Nerd Party, Matt Hansen, when we did the Delta Quadrant, we were all about the hair, much to the dismay and groans of the other co-hosts on that podcast at the time.
Now, we probably should wrap it up. And
yeah,
I feel like... this one might not be a small thing, but it's something that I really, really enjoy. And I guess you could call it a small thing in terms of the size of the ship or the size of what it is or anything like that. But that's the Delta Flyer. I love the Delta Flyer exists. Yeah, I love that the Delta Flyer exists, because it's something that we've never seen before in Star Trek. Not in Deep Space Nine, not in Next Generation, and not in the original series. We've never seen anyone build a shuttle from scratch. Now, we had the introduction of the runabouts in Deep Space Nine, which was really cool and really interesting, but those were standard issue. You know, they sent those out. They were bigger than a shuttle. They were actually their own registered crafts,
yes,
not just a shuttlecraft that belongs to a mothership, but an actual, you know, just a small ship. And with the Delta Flyer, we got to see it do things that we've never seen before. You know, like the nacelles moved like its mothership.
Yes, yes.
And we got to see moves up, like, and this was mainly because of CGI. We got to see it move up and down and flip around and barrel roll and everything like that. And fire torpedoes and fire phasers. And it had a really cool window. Like, talk about small things there. I love the design of the windows. Like that front window. There's no reason for it to be designed that way.
Except because you want it that way.
Exactly. There's no real reason other than aesthetic. And I love that.
Oh, just speaking generally of the aesthetic, that is definitely a Tom Paris creation. And what I love is that Tom Paris made it what he wanted. It's a custom built for Tom Paris flying machine. It's fantastic. I think my favorite particular part of the Delta Flyer is the retro control panel. I mean, that just screams Tom Paris, and it looks cool. So I dig it.
Yeah, the hot rod of the Delta Quadrant. Yeah, A lot of great things.
Love that.
In the Delta Flyer. All right. Well, what's your last small thing?
You know, one thing that got me thinking about this episode in general was what we did for the show art for our Prixen little special for last year. And that was to put red and green in the warp core for the show art, in case you haven't seen it. And one thing that I absolutely love about Voyager is the sound and the way that the warp core illuminates. It's hypnotizing. And there is actually a loop on YouTube where you can listen to the warp core just on, like, for hours at a time. It's on just an endless solid loop. It's fluent, and it just keeps you going. It's the best background noise. If you need to focus on a project, it's so relaxing. It helps you focus. Mm-hmm. I love it. I love that sound. It's such great ambiance.
We actually used that engine noise for our Prixen message this year, or last year.
Oh, okay. Like you mixed that together, so you found that loop, and oh, great, great, cool.
Yeah. I found that loop and put it in. So like I put that in underneath. That was the baseline sound effect. So you have that ambient engine noise just humming in the background. And then you have like a party, cocktail party going on. And then you have some like walking sound effects and glass clinking and everything like that. So yeah, I use that in the Prixen 1. So go back, go back and listen to it and you'll hear that ambient engine noise.
Definitely. And if you do need a way to relax, that's a great way to do it. There's also the bridge ambient noise. There's several other Star Trek loops out there if you're not as fond of the warp core as I am.
I actually made it wasn't the engine room and it wasn't the bridge, but on Next Generation, I think that the Next Generation has the most prevalent ship noise. Just whether you're in the quarters or in the hallway, no matter where you are, there's just this Enterprise D ship noise. Like when you're on a planet, you don't hear it. When you're on the ship, you hear it. It's always there. It's in every single scene. My parents had me make a CD of it and they put it in their clock radio and they would fall asleep to it. They time it for like 90 minutes they would fall asleep to it. Yeah.
Yeah. Again, I mean, just ambient noise, the warp core as well. That was the heartbeat. I mean, it really is the heartbeat of the ship, but especially on the Enterprise D, the way it would thump. And thump faster, just like a real heartbeat would.
When it's going really fast, they would go.
Right, where, and then on Voyager, it's a little different where the humming becomes a little louder and a little more agitated. I kind of like that too. It's just its own
thing.
And
it swirls faster.
It swirls faster and it just feels like chaos. Oh, hang on. Here we go.
It's good stuff.
Yeah, I could do this all night, but we're hitting our time limit for TTJ. So we better start wrapping this up. Darn it.
Yeah, I want to hear what you guys think, whether it's on Twitter, on Facebook, the Babel Conference, wherever it is. Please let us know what small things you love about Voyager, things that we haven't mentioned, because there's so many things that we have not mentioned.
Oh, this was not by any means comprehensive.
Yeah, we want to hear from you guys. You can also email us by going to trek.fm/contact and selecting To the Journey from the drop-down menu. And yeah, we would love to hear from you guys.
Yeah, we do. The small things on Voyager aren't the only thing that we've been talking about on Trek FM this week. Here's a glimpse at what else is happening on the network.
Previously on Trek.fm, the Orb.
He requested, you know, a Bajoran officer to serve with him on purpose. You know, he understands. You make this their own.
He did it on purpose. I could see him, like, accidentally requesting a Bajoran officer. Oh man, I checked the wrong box on the form. Damn.
The ready room.
Actually, I think at this point, Vulcan Love Slave was probably just a short story, right? It hadn't been turned into a full
That's right. It's not a full blown novel at that point. Yeah.
It's just fanfic. It's just fanfic.
Yeah, just fanfic. Right.
Just on the internet. People started writing after First Contact there in Montana.
To the Journey! It's very much the genesis of Seven of Nine.
Genesis alone is not. Sorry.
Commentary, Trek Stars.
The fact that this came out right in between Ocean's 11 and Ocean's 12, where you've got filmmakers who are at the very tip-top of their game.
Oh boy, here comes the Soderbergh speech, everybody. Strap yourselves in, we're going to Soderbergh.
The 602 Club.
But I mean, we talk about the ending and we're sort of dancing around it here. I have to know, because when this book first came out, and every time I look at the cover, I'm reminded of this. This is the first time I can consciously remember a piece of artwork having to do with the story spoiling the ending for me.
Literary Treks.
Just so many great lessons here about, look, life is not safe. but it's good.
Oh, absolutely.
If you can get through it, you know, and bind together with those people around you and go through it together. That's how you make it, is together.
Women at Warp.
She's the communications officer first. She can be Spock's girlfriend second.
So how do you think people would respond if you said, describe who Carol Marcus is after seeing this movie?
She looks nice in her bra.
Meta Trex.
I looked it up, and ornare is the Latin word for to adorn.
That's fascinating.
So I looked up breca, and it turns out the same spelling, B-R-E-K-K-A, is Old Norse for slope or hillside.
And that, listeners, is something you will only get right here on Meta Trex.
Better living through etymology.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
So check out all of our shows. None of them are possible without the support of you, our fantastic listeners. Go to patreon.com/trekfm if you haven't already. Consider becoming a monthly subscriber, because this is what keeps the network running. If you like what we do, any amount of donation helps. On TTJ, we have our associate producers we want to thank, and those fantastic people are Kenneth Tripp, Jamie Deuce, Aaron Harvey, and Bruce Lish. So thank you, guys. I also want to thank those of you who have left us iTunes reviews while we were on our holiday break. And so we have a couple people to thank, namely Rob Moorick and Pete from Portland, for both leaving us glowing reviews, a 5-star rating, as well as Irish Trek Fan for leaving us a review and a 5-star rating in, you guessed it, Ireland's iTunes store. You guys are all awesome, and thank you, Irish Trek Fan, for letting us know, because I would have not otherwise checked Ireland's iTunes store. So thank you all, guys, so much for helping us out. It really does go a long way to helping other people see the show. And alas, we're going to have to move on to next week now, so what are we going to do then?
Next week, we're doing something that you guys, I think, really like, and we definitely really like, and that is Essential Trek of Season 5. It's where we go through every single episode of the season and then discuss and sometimes argue whether or not it's essential to the overall viewing of Star Trek Voyager. But you'll have to tune in next week to find out.
That's right. So until then, this has been To the Journey.
To the Journey!